Hi all, and welcome to our latest Celtic Underground, which is really, I suppose, this is Celtic Underground Flag Day appraisal. And with that spirit, we've got our own indoor fireworks. and I've also just burnt the chips. We're getting the ultras effect as well in my kitchen. But aside from that,
I'm just hoping, if we're really doing the Flag Day one, I'm hoping there's absolutely no hot water in any of your toilets or kitchens or anything like that then.
This is through a filter, like a really cold filter. So it's just, God, we really are creating the scene of Celtic Park last night. But great to have, great to see you again, Stephen and Matthew. I've not been on for a few weeks, so I've been watching you guys. But it's great to see you in the ether. And we'll go straight to that Flag Day. Matthew, it felt quite weird, didn't it? It felt quite weird on a Monday night, and it felt quite kind of low key, didn't it?
It did. It was, I mean, I don't want to start on negatives. Start of the season, got the win, positive. Yeah, it did. It was surprising. I think inevitably, let's face it, really Flag Day should be the opener of the season. I mean, that's the whole point of it. I suppose in fairness that ship has long since sailed. You know, that's obviously, it's a while since, you know, the team which inevitably is us who wins the league is definitely the first team to play. To be the last team to play felt a bit strange. But yeah, it did. It felt all day. I don't know if it's because I'm not at work just now, but it was one of those things where you sort of felt like you could have forgotten the game was on. You know, all day, because it was a Monday night and because of the time of year, there's almost psychologically a feeling it felt like going a bit like to a pre-season friendly in the days when you used to get them on your season tickets. So it felt a bit like
in the
that.
Days we used to go to them.
Well, absolutely. But yeah, it was a strange one. I think the one that probably, and it's been spoke about quite a lot by now, I'm quite surprised that they didn't get somebody to unfurl the flag. I know Callum McGregor did, but you know, you sort of think of the captain's role as being the one to collect the league trophy. And traditionally, what they seem to do is add somebody who's an outsider to do the unfurling, and that didn't happen. It felt a little bit like a missed opportunity. I mean, but if you want to sort of get the fans back on side, there must be some 97-year-old season ticket holder that could have been selected. No, you just look like that, Andrew. You know,
no, lucky. You should watch more of my podcasts. Ross helped me get through that one that day. We weren't quite sure who the 97-year-old was. It was me, lucky, with my technology. I think without Ross, I wouldn't have got there. Ross, and what's your thoughts looking on the actual Flag Day? So, I mean, what's it like watching it? I'll tell you what I thought, and I know it's like, is our flagpole like a curly-wurly? Because they seem to be getting smaller and smaller. Do they not? Like, was it just me? I mean, how did it look in the telly? The flagpole looked tiny. Right. No, Stephen, I'll come back to you for the analysis then. Stephen, did you see
I heard that earlier as well. I was late to the pub, so I heard that on something else earlier. They were saying the flag seemed to be smaller and the pole seemed to be smaller. I think maybe it's just, I must say, like, it's not a new thing. I can't remember the days of We Won the League Again. Remember the British Airways song?
Yeah.
Fly the flag. That was a big thing. To be honest, we win it every season now. Do we really need, you know, a lot of people were moaning to me. It's not a thing in England. It's like when I was chatting with Keith last week. Just get on with it. It doesn't matter. The thing is, we're all beholden to Sky now anyway. So just play the games when we play the games. You know, it could have been worse. We could have been Friday night. You know, yeah. We could have been trailing everybody else by the time the weekend started. But, you know, it is what it is. There's no point worrying about it.
No,
as long
enough.
As we're raising the flag, I don't care what day it is or what time it is.
Of what size it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got a wee flag, you like a wee tiny one, you know, the ones that like you get for, I was going to say waving at the Queen, but we wouldn't.
Yeah.
But there you go, like we'd do other things to the Queen, but there you go. Or the King, or anybody.
We live in a world of shrinkflation. Like, do you not expect that your Snickers is going to get smaller, that your flag's only going to get smaller, your poles, and, you know. We criticise the board for being cheap. They just maybe thought this year, let's buy, you know, instead of buying a, I don't know, 20-foot pole, let's get the 12-foot one, and, you know, flag dimensions, well, we can save a few quid there, you know, the way of the world nowadays.
I'm just waiting on Andrew, I'm just waiting on a very, very short clip meme for you to become that thing where you just quite boldly on air announced, I've got a wee one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just waiting on that happening.
probably a few ex-girlfriends. Look at, well, that was the days before. Anyway, right, Ross, and the Dominion. Was it the diminution?
Things get smaller.
Yeah, did that extend to the kind of enterprise that Celtic showed for you? I mean, I think we're in this kind of period now where the heightened anxiety over another kind of tumbleweed transfer window for so long just infects everything. It infects the body politic. And I didn't know, I come back and watched the highlights last night. I thought, wasn't it that bad for a first? I've seen many of these first games of the season of that nature. How did it look to you, Ross?
First half was near identical to what you've seen last season. It was very one-dimensional, very one-paced. No real difference to anything that you've seen last season. But to be fair, I'd said this about pre-season. I've seen a lot of chat in our Substack chat today. Sorry, I haven't been involved in it too much. School holidays. Yeah. I'm sure many of you will appreciate that. Saying, you know, could we move to other systems? But what did you see in pre-season? You seen pre-season what was basically the system for last season. There was no real changes to the dynamics. Obviously, the main difference through pre-season was Duran was up front, and obviously he was having a bit of success as that sort of pressing striker. But we never seen that last night because he was put out on the right wing. You seen a lot of the same patterns as last season. There was a lot of dependency on Tierney sort of, you know, get balls into the box, and that's great because he's got that fantastic ability to put in a great delivery, which obviously resulted in the goal. But when you looked at the first half, it was just really static. We were really slow building up. You were ending up where you had a situation where Dundee were quite happy sitting in the back line with us almost having a player up against every defender, but there was no movement. So if you're a defender and you've got focal sort of something to focus on in front of you that you can probably in most cases last night, you've seen it. You could almost physically touch the Celtic player in front of them. And the Celtic player is looking back towards his own goal. And the play's kind of happening quite slowly around them. It's going from McGregor to Tierney. And, you know, you looked at all the passing data for last night. Most of it, on the face of it, was quite negative passing data. A lot of it was backwards and sideways. And, you know, we've said it before about, you know, horseshoe football. And that summed up the first half. And so the strikers are kind of stood there. And at times they look statuesque, but that's not their fault. They have to have a trigger point for them to then go, I need to move or I need to run. But because we were doing everything so slowly, there was nothing. There was no trigger to do anything. And there was nobody coming for deeper and running beyond them. And then you looked at sort of the play for deeper in our own half when we had the sort of phase of play where it would start with Sinisalo, it'd go to McGregor. Again, it all kind of looked a bit disjointed. Even with players who are quite familiar with each other, it still looked a bit disjointed. There was a few sort of
rusty,
silly,
I
risky
think,
passes.
It
was just,
called it. Yeah, rusty.
It wasn't a good first half.
No, the second half improved, Matthew. The second half improved. I mean, what was your first impressions? I must say, of course I'm not writing them off or anything like that, but if he'd been signed for 600,000, people would be giving him a different appraisal today. They would be, because I know I joked on about he was a kind of hybrid of kind of Chavinchara, Kenny, but he missed chances. He missed a couple of chances and he looked a bit kind of cumbersome in the sense when he was trying to come deep, which he shouldn't be doing because that's not really his game. But when he was trying to kind of get involved and kind of knit the play, he didn't look like an £11 million striker, let's be honest about it, but that might come. But what was your opinion, Matthew?
I think it's too early to say that. I think on the positives, he got himself into three or four good positions. Now, you can do the negatives of, well, he didn't score those chances, but, you know, fundamentally, there's that old adage, you know, of if you're trying to choose if you're trying to choose between two players that you're going to sign, one that's sort of playing at the very, very top of their game, and one who's not doing quite so well but has got bigger potential, it makes more sense to sign the one with the bigger potential. Because if you sign the one who you know this is the limit, as against the one who is here currently but can do better, it's the same with that. He got into a lot of positions, which was positive. I felt, especially in the first half, his problem was that he looked desperate to score. I'm not comparing the two, although they were both our record signings in terms of money, but It was similar to Cascarino. If you go back, you know, 30 odd years, I always felt part from a very early stage, and certainly when it became an issue that he hadn't scored, only Cascarino just became desperate to score. And that actually makes it harder. You know, if you're going to score, you're going to score. You know, it's as simple as that. What you actually have to do is go out and play your proper game, is go out and get in the positions that you are expected to be in. If you get a chance, by all means take it. If there's a chance to square it to a teammate, don't worry that you haven't still scored. Give it to them, because inevitably, if you're good enough, you'll score. Nobody, for example, I'm not saying we're quite at this stage, but nobody worried, you know, like, that eventually about setting up Henrik Larsson to score goals. Nobody worried about setting up Chris Sutton. So I thought that in the first half, he looked just a bit too desperate. You know, like, there was just times where you felt he was snatching at balls because almost, you know, if he had the chance to think about it. I think what he has to do is go and play his game. We've signed a guy that's got scoring experience in the Champions League. So, of course, he's shown an ability in the past to score. If you're being negative, Brattback has an ability to score, but not as much perhaps in Scotland. I don't think it's that case. Yeah. I think it's similar to the issue about Duran, in the sense that we've got this habit of signing people that play in one system and then saying to them, let's do something different.
That's one of Ross's. Yeah. That's one of Ross's.
But it is, and it doesn't make a particular bit of sense. You know, Duran, I thought, who looked positive, I thought, you know, he looked like he was willing to get involved. He had, you know, a couple of nice sort of touches and positions. But there's no point in saying you're a guy that we've, you know, that you've before you play in the centre, we've played you pre-season in the centre. But now, because we are beholden on sticking to a formation which is quite outdated now. I mean, this is a point I've made before, but the strange thing is the way we've stuck with the formation. You know, Ange came in and genuinely revitalised us and changed everything. And then Brendan came in and basically said, well, I'm not going to play the exact thing, but I'm going to keep the same formation. I'm not going to do the exact system. And then Martin O'Neill, for different reasons, obviously, came in and sort of said, I'm going to just keep that as well. Like, you know, Ross was alluding to earlier, you know, and like you were alluding to, Andrew, but what we've signed, I think that remains the question mark. Of last night's team, 9 of them are last season's team. 2 of them aren't going to be here in the short distance. You know, like, I would assume that Johnston is going to go. I would assume that Engels is going to go. So there's still a question mark about what we're going to look like this season. For who, I thought it was positive he was trying to find the ball. I thought it was positive he didn't hide, you know, and I thought it was positive he was getting into positions. Yeah, even better if he scored. I think, to me, he strikes me as a confidence player that if he had that, would probably it would take a bit of a load off his mind. Hopefully next time, though.
No, I mean, the other thing that kind of interested me, Stephen, was the fact what he said afterwards. He said he would have to get used to playing in grass again because 13 of the 16 top flight. I mean, trust us, it's just the time. Celtic going to come out on Sunday. And the one time you think, I wish they still had that plastic pitch.
Yeah.
It might help the new signing here.
Typical of our lot, yeah. I think there's a lot of talk about who he's a system striker and do we have the same system that he's used to? Ultimately, I think, you know, that was one of the worries people had about signing a player from Bodo because they don't have a track record of all doing well elsewhere. Then we had the Harald Brattback thing. Ultimately, the guy can score goals. I think he will score goals. I actually thought he played okay last night. He got good chances. He didn't seem to... The head didn't go down. He was quite confident. He seems...
Very confident.
He seems a good character. He's already got relationships with his teammates. Reminds me a bit of Alistair Johnson. Alistair Johnson's always kind of happy. You know, he never looks sullen or do worries. You never really get much of a smile out of Engels or Hatate. You know, so he looks to me like a guy that will fit in well. The goal will come. Yeah, he's maybe trying too hard. As you talked about Cascarino, nearer back to that, John Hartson couldn't he buy a goal when we signed him for a lot of money?
But yeah.
You know, he nearly
Kenny
took the Kilmarnock player into the next week. Such was his frustration. I think the goals will come. If you look at the traditional Celtic underground, Eddie Pearson rumours, they're not meant to score in the first game anyway. That's a curse.
Yeah.
Like Kilmarnock on Sunday. The interesting thing I thought about Duran is we brought Duran in good time, the only player we signed in the summer. So he's the only one that got a pre-season in. And all of our pre-season revolved around him playing up front and having a system around that. And in the first game of the season, we stuck him on the wing. And we put the other guy up front. And that just seemed to me, you know, when he took Duran off, I'd have taken put off then and left Duran on through the middle. Because Duran looked to have more energy about him.
He did.
You know, he was more involved and more up for it. But, you know, that was the thing I noticed. You know, the system needs to change, I think. Here's a rogue question for you. If Nancy was coaching us last night, would we have played better? I think we would have. With those players and the system that Nancy was trying to introduce, with that squad that we had last night, Nancy does a lot better.
Well, I mean, we're not
bringing them back.
Yeah, no. But Ross, do you see any kind of suggestion that he talked about, and he'll talk afterwards about playing Hu and Duran together? He said they would work on that in the next few weeks. Do you see any kind of system where he would play the two of them together?
It's not whether he would necessarily play the two of them together. It's what's behind them. And how do you set that up? Because this entire team structure is set up to play 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1. And we tried nothing in pre-season. And people keep on asking me about this 3-5 innings. I can go back and go, what did you watch in pre-season? One of the biggest complaints that anybody in Celtic makes is we don't get opportunities to try different things because training, we often have two games a week, and that's coming. We're right on the cusp of that because obviously Europe is coming. So if we're going to hit this period where from basically this, as soon as the European games hit, it's going to be two games a week, three games a week from now until Christmas, with the exception of the international breaks where most of them are obviously going to be away. So if we were going to do that and try and practice on that shape, even though Hu wasn't here, you can still start working on a shape. You can still start working on phases of play as to how that's going to look. So then when you're putting someone into it, the vast majority are familiar, but now we're saying we're going to do it after the season started where nobody's going to be familiar, because nobody in our team who's been there for any length of time for the last couple of years, apart from international duty, has really went and played anything else. So we are sort of stuck in a shell, and
O'Neill feels beholden to that, because I know somebody that he was talking to about that a bit, that he calls it, they're just kind of inculcated, you know, in this system, that you can't get it out. They're just drilled into them that he doesn't think that he can change it.
Yeah, we've seen, and we all had this discussion last season that when the team was struggling and people are saying, you know, it looks poorly coached and things like that. And at times I looked at the first half last night and said, it's the same. But you're saying last season they didn't want to change too much because they felt that the team were just too ingrained in it. So your pre-season's your opportunity to change that, and we never changed that. So
my point is,
it's not that it's impossible. Anything's possible. But if you're going to start that process, you start it in pre-season. You don't start saying, well, hold there, we're going to wait until literally we're a week before the Champions League qualifiers or whatever. Let's start tinkering with Hu plays where. That familiarity process needed to begin 5-6 weeks ago. Which is, you know, I'm sure we'll probably come to transfer speculation at some point later on, but it's why we've always made a big point of saying a refresh has been needed for a long time, and we needed to be proactive very early in the summer. If that meant paying over the odds for a couple of players, well, then so be it. That's kind of the position we put ourselves in, because it's then given ourselves the best opportunity to build a structure and build a system that we go into Champions League qualifiers with. But last night, we went into the game against Dundee, and, you know, I think people were right to say the lineup looked strong.
Yeah.
But ultimately, offensively, the process and the tactics were all pretty much identical to last season's. So you're kind of just seeing the same things play out. There was hope last night. You didn't ask me about hope, but I quite liked the fact that there was good movement from it. And the fact that when we were getting the ball in the middle of the pitch, Negrin especially was head up looking to see where he was.
He's obviously seen
something in training to go, you know, I trust that if I feed you, you're going to score goals. That to me is a positive. The fact that he was continually making those movements. But again, it's speed of play. And I think I said this about Duran as well. If you're going to play Duran up front, and to me, Duran is a striker. We're saying he can play on the right wing. But when he played on the right wing in Portugal, he was not good. There was a reason why he went to Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
They changed him into a striker, and there's a reason why he's then been noticed. He's then had a bit of success in the Champions League. It's because he's a pressing striker and he's a nuisance and he'll drift wide, but he is not a wide player. And you've seen that last night. It was basically boots on the touchline over at the side. There was very limited opportunities for him to come inside, but on the rare occasions he did, he nearly created a great opportunity where he
did. There was one in the second half. Yeah, great turn.
And he looks far more lively in a central area. So if you're going to buy that player, Matthew's right. You know, we bought a player and we're going, this is his profile. This is why we bought him. But by the way, we're really struggling because we've never bothered to buy a winger. So there you go, pal. It's not fair.
It's like Barry Wisher. We've done the same with Barry Wisher last year. He's a shit winger, but he was never a winger. And he's just been discounted and discarded and put in the bin.
I think with him, to be fair, I think part of that is a confidence thing in terms of his injury.
Yeah.
Because I know he's a talented player, because I spoke to a young player the other week there who was up training with the first team, and he said Balak Wisha was brilliant. He was like, they were doing 3v3s.
Yeah.
And he went, everybody wanted to be on Balak Wisha's team. He's like, he's technically so good, very clever. But they said the same thing. The player that they see in training is not the player that they've seen on the pitch. So, there were positives last night. It wasn't doom and gloom. The second half was better. There
more
was
urgency.
Positive signs with hope. Yeah, there was more urgency. You know, there's probably a reason why Brian's not here tonight, and that's because comfortably Negrin was man of the match.
Yeah. Well, expand on that then, Ross. Why did you see him, apart from that? It was a great header. We all thought, I'll be honest, we all thought it was who that had scored, because Negrin's ball patch, because we're seeing it from behind them, because we're in the main stand, Negrin's ball patch looks exactly like who's we not, his hair not. So we thought that we were all jumping about. And my boy said, why is people not getting more? Because if it had been who, people would have been even more energised about it. But then it only came through that it was Negrin, then that's why people weren't quite as kind of excitable as we were. But I mean, like Negrin, second season, how many times have you seen a second season better than the first? Because let's be honest, he's not getting to Spurs or Rangers. His agent's done his best, but I don't think any of that kind of stuff. I thought you were going to say, Brian's not here, because Brian has become our Del Boy, right? At the end of every kind of chat group we have, he said, you know, Del Boy used to always say, didn't he, Matthew, you're old enough to remember Only Fools and Horses?
Yeah, of course.
He used to say, this time next year we'll be millionaires, right? So Brian says to us, this time next week we'll have signed three players, isn't it? It's almost like he's the Celtic underground Del Boy. So
he's in hiding.
So Matthew, I mean, it's the crying, it's just, there's a desperation. It becomes a kind of self-fulfilling kind of stress ball for Celtic supporters, doesn't it? But we all, everybody knows, but even the board know. The one thing I would say, I don't believe that they're not trying, but it's like Ross says, sometimes you just have to say, I'm going to go and make the deal. Matthew.
That fundamentally, that is the problem that the board have in terms of the way that they are, that fans talk about them. You know, I mean, we spoke about it on one of the previous podcasts, where the problem is that the board doesn't have a reservoir of goodwill. It doesn't have the trust of supporters. So,
doesn't have a thimble of goodwill.
You know, we've got almost a month or whatever it is until, you know, the full deadline. I know, obviously, we've also got the deadlines before the Champions League qualifiers. So on the one hand, you might say, you know, you won the double last season. You've still got a few weeks when you can do transfers before the window fully slams shut, you know, to do that sort of joke. So you might say, well, look, we don't need to worry just now. We've got the strongest squad in the country. We've signed two very expensive forwards. We know that other people are going to come in. And that's okay if that you had the reservoir of trust where the fans are like, yeah, this board has repeatedly shown that, you know, they can go out and they can get the deals over the line. I think the challenge you've got in any situation is, I think a lot of Celtic supporters have been getting themselves wound up over the summer about the transfers that are being done elsewhere, Hearts, Rangers in particular, just numerically as much as anything else.
And well, I've seen that.
The issue is that I always think that a good way to think about transfers is this. You know, you have, if we were to draw a line here just now, so over here, we have like junior players, like the people that are playing for, you know, Pollock or whatever else. And over here we have Mbappe and so on. Now, the reality is we can never be over at this side. You know, we're never going to be able to go over with your Mbappes and so on. And we don't want to be over on this side. So what you're really trying to do is find that middle ground. You know, those people who would want to come to Celtic, who are feasibly affordable within what is a realistic budget for us, but are also of the quality. Because the further down you go, it's very easy to get things done. You know, if we wanted to sign Pollock centre forward, you know, we could do it. And we could announce that we had, you know, we'd signed a new centre forward. But, and this is no criticism of Pollock, but I don't think many supporters would be happy if, you know, suddenly we picked a guy from the junior. So it's not just about getting any old transfer over the line. It's not, and I think sometimes we get ourselves wound up. We look and say, you know, you only have to look in recent years, although they've signed good players as well. You know, a lot of the time, guys that have gone to Rangers, fans are like, oh, they've signed these guys. And then when you actually see them, you say, well, there's a reason
they didn't sign them.
Get that over the line. I think, yeah, though, ultimately what you have to do at some point is make that decision. You have to try and, you know, bring the line in together and say, right, within this spectrum of both what do we want, what would we reasonably sign, balanced against what can we actually expect to do, and go for that. Yeah, I'm at the point of now, it would be great to sign a guy here, but to be honest, if you tell me that we'll sign a guy here and we'll definitely sign him and we'll give him to embed in the team, then that would make much more sense because, you know, we are, what, a couple of weeks away now from, well, two weeks tomorrow, obviously, we've got the first of our Champions League qualifiers and we've got the first of our tens of millions of pounds of money is available. Now,
it's almost too late now, but it's
we have the same fight of the year. There is a chicken and an egg element. On the one hand, if we wait until after we qualify for the Champions League, if we do, but if we wait until after that, then we are more attractive to players and we have more money that we can use to sign those more attractive players. So that's great. The flip side, of course, is, and we've obviously seen this before, that, you know, if you wait to sign these guys until you've qualified, well, you might not qualify and suddenly you have a lower budget. And that's our problem. We clearly need, as I mentioned earlier, at least two of last night's starting 11 are not going to be here, you know, by the end of the month. They're just not.
Johnston and Engels.
Johnston and
Engels looked as if he'd kind of checked out a wee bit, didn't he?
Even if Johnston and Engels were staying, let's imagine for a moment they were staying, we probably need at least four potential first team players, like in terms, certainly in terms of good quality squad players, and a couple of them first picks. So, and when they leave, you're up
probably
five
say four
or six.
First picks. Yeah.
It is a lot. You know, we are then struggling if we're saying, well, in the next 3 weeks or so, yes, we've signed a couple, but that was our only movement for a while. And this again takes us back to it would be okay to say it's okay, the board have got it in hand, if there was an actual trust. That is, but we know that the trust doesn't exist.
Yeah,
so inevitably, people are going to get
exist.
Angry.
Stephen, I mean, these four guys we were talking about earlier on, Regimus, that's Ferez Regimus. That's we practiced the Arabic pronunciation, didn't we, Stephen? We've got
still got it wrong, I think. But go on.
Genetis from Torino, boy. Mika Bauer, and Benjamin Tahirovic. The Bosnian, who was at the Bosnian. These are the four names that are bubbling up the most.
Well, Hassan is bubbling around as well. Still,
is he back? Because I thought he disappeared.
I don't know. The thing is,
how many of those five do you think they'll get then?
I don't think it's trust anymore because this movie is, we've failed 7 out of 9 times, right? So I don't matter what you're saying, you do this and then you attract players afterwards, okay? But when you do it, and you don't qualify, the reason you're not qualifying is because you're not making your squad better. Now, absolutely, we'd enough to beat Kaira Amati last year.
Yeah.
I'm sure if we got them this year, we would probably be. But it doesn't matter. One player or two players makes a bit of a difference. So we're doing the same thing again. You're making it more. Our whole season rests on this game in 2 weeks and 3 weeks. If we don't come through that qualifier, the mood is already set.
Yeah. It blackens.
It's just an extraordinary gamble to take when we talked about Hu and Duran. We seem to have paid the top of prices for them, right? Now, Hu we were talking about back in May, So how it's taken 3 months to do that, I don't know. But we've ended up paying what they wanted, okay? So we might have saved wage or whatever, but if that was the price, if we'd paid that in July, he'd have played all the preseason games. He would have been settled in the team last night. You'd have, you know, so you've got your team set up. As it is, we've got 2 weeks now. Is Alistair Johnson still going to be there? Is Engo still going to be there? So your team is weaker without them. If they are there, I think you can still trust Alistair Johnson to put in his usual shift. Engo's, I don't know if he didn't down tools last year in January when the offer came in and we turned it down because we needed him. There is a danger, and players are always going to be thinking about their next move. And I just think when you've got 40, 50 million pounds at stake and we're messing over 300 or 400 grand to gamble that's, you know...
It's not good business practice.
And then you talk about not being able to do the deals and the trust. I think we've got a trust issue with other clubs who are in the marketplace. We've got a chief executive that doesn't speak to, that can't speak to the support. So how do you send him in to negotiate a deal? You know, other clubs have got sporting directors. No, Bruce's sporting director went to Feyenoord in the summer. First thing he did, he went in, he sacked Van Persie. They signed a number of players, and Bruges promoted a guy from within, and they've signed a number of players. So both of those are the kind of clubs that we should be looking at, instead of looking at Rangers and, well, thank God we didn't get Shankman, that we didn't get Devlin. We shouldn't be looking at them. We should. Yeah. They should be in our rearview mirror, so far away. But the danger is, if we keep doing what we do, we're leaving 40 million quid on the table, 50, whatever that sum is. And that's the danger if we don't get the recruitment right. Now, we seem to be good at finding the players because, you know, most of the guys we're being linked with look like good profiles. But are we going to get them?
Yeah. Ross,
if
what's
we get
your...
two, I'd be delighted.
Yeah. Ross, what's your thoughts of those four guys I mentioned? The Ferres, I'm sticking to it. Ferres, Regimes, Javidis, Genitis. God, I've changed that for the last time, for 2 minutes ago. Mika Bauer and Benjamin Tahirovic. You've had a wee look at some of these, I'm sure, haven't you? Like Cross, because Celtic have been linked. Celtic have been linked.
I've not necessarily got the same pronunciations as you, but
No. Honestly, I got mine for Transfer Market. You know that you press the button. Press the button. So I did that 4 times, and I come up with 4 different ones every time.
They're not, you know, they're good players in the sense that they're good at the roles that they play. And it goes back, you know, you go back to what Matthew said earlier on. If you're signing a player of a certain profile, and sorry, that's my phone beeping, I'm guilty of that. Oh, naughty me. I got to, it's because I was running in.
You're looking very smart tonight, if you don't mind me saying so. You've been on...
No, this is like a...
Official duty. Right. I thought it was a button down.
Just a shell top to keep me... It was pouring the rain earlier on, so I just quickly chucked this on. I was out doing stuff outside. I digress. Yeah, no, they're good players. Are they all going to fit? Hard to tell. Because Bauer is, to me, a sort of 6-8, he wants to sit deep, take the ball, and then move forward. He's more progressive than Cal McGregor, just quite simply because he's younger and he's obviously got more legs. Again, my
Tahirovic, is he not a bit like that? Tahirovic
tends to sit deeper as well. And Janitas is similar. Janitas isn't really, he's not a 6. I would say he's more of an 8. He's probably similar profile to Engels.
Yeah, I thought he looked like the kind of... Yeah, Engels replacement.
Good crosser, physical, big, but I wouldn't say he's got many what I would say outstanding traits. He's a nice...
Sounds like Engels again then.
Your words, not mine. But again, it's what is your design? So like I don't dislike Engels. I think some people hear me talk about
Sorry,
Engels,
I didn't
like,
mean that, but...
No, but
if
I
you
think
say,
in general...
What is his 9 out of 10 facets?
I look at Engels and look at him and see a player that, to me, I think Celtic have misprofiled and totally misunderstood. And I think there was evidence of that in last night's game. In the first half, when you looked at his average position for where he was receiving the ball, he was really high. He was almost at points beyond Negrin, and you go, Negrin's the second striker within this sort of setup. And McGregor was really quite isolated. Whereas in the second half, when we were better, you look at where Ingles was receiving the ball and then driving to, he was much better. So he was then, he created the opportunity for Tierney because he came for a deeper position into a forward position, and then he gets the turn and he plays a pass out to the side, Tierney gets the shot off. He also comes one where he drops away a bit deeper to the right in McGregor this time, and he uses the skill that is Ingles' 10 out of 10 skill, it's his range of passing, and he pings one 45 yards right onto Yang's toe, Yang's 1v1. Yeah. Now, Yang didn't need to do anything, but you're going, Ingles, when he gets involved in the game and when he gets encouraged to get involved in the game, coming from a deeper role and moving forward, is really can be really effective. But when he drifts away beyond McGregor and he kind of starts floating away further up, he kind of gets a bit lost in the game. And so some of his better skill sets, like his range of passing, are kind of lost.
As you bring him deeper, he certainly doesn't have composure. Anyway, yeah. I mean, you see that with his header and he'd another chance. He just doesn't have that kind of composure.
His header was one of those where I think, you know, he's concentrated on getting the power. He should hit the target, but then, you know, it's one of those. It's his one chance in the game. And, you know, if we're going on the assumption that if everybody gets one chance and it's in a reasonable area, they have to hit the target, then we're scunnered because every player would fail on that metric. But it was a good run. It was, you know, it was the right idea. That's the positive thing. But I just think that he's one of those players that, to me, I'd like to say a good manager, but I just think if a different manager looked at him and profiled him differently and positioned him differently, I think you would see much, much more from him. And I think in some ways, that's why you've seen the EPL interest start to disappear, because they're looking in the same profile, big guy, reasonably quick, you know, strong, good range of passing.
Yeah.
But actually, when you look at his game, you're going, how much does he really get involved? Does he get involved enough? And that's maybe not always his fault. I think that is sometimes just
that's
how
a good point.
Play.
Yeah.
He's kind of lost in that midfield mire.
My boy said to me, he says, is Engel's got to be one of those players that people look up and go, there's a good player in there, but nobody actually manages to tease it out. You wonder if that's the kind of player he is.
He is, but I think a large part of that is, again, we have to look at what are we asking of the player. So, you know, if he's been asked to do what he's been asked to do, because that's why he's in the team every week. It's like Negrin. People all say Negrin shite. To me, I think that's hilarious. Negrin plays every week. Multiple managers have played them every week. For the last 2.5 seasons, he scored a barrel load of goals for us and for Norgeland. He didn't have the greatest of World Cup, but he was then played in a very different role for the games where Sweden had qualified against Poland, where he was excellent, but he was playing as part of two tens as opposed to one. So if you ask certain things of particular players, you're going to get different results. And to me, Ingles, Negrin, and a lot of players in our team are like that. It's like you're looking and going, they're playing to instruction, because if they weren't, they wouldn't be playing. The manager would just hook them off, whether that was Rogers, whether that was O'Neill, whether it was Nancy. They just hook them off. You're not doing what I'm asking you to do. But they're playing every week, so they're doing what is being asked of them. I just think, personally, there's, especially with Ingles, I would like to see him come from deeper, play beside McGregor as part of the build-up, and then move forward more and drive into the game, as opposed to being quite static and maybe too far away from McGregor. But that's just my preference. That's how I think, personally, I would look to get more from him. But everybody's different. They're not bad players. It's just, I think our structure is very dumbed down. I think it's very basic. Someone asked me earlier on and said, you know, someone was hammering Callum McGregor and went, he's constantly safe. And it's like, well, when you look at his options, if you were analysing Callum McGregor, you go, right, say he gets the ball in the middle of the pitch and there's no pressure on him. Every player then has 10 options. And if you were to rank those options for 1 to 10, 10 would be the most difficult, which would be like, the you know, straight into the forward, set him through and go, whatever. That's the most difficult one. And one would be the easy one, which would be a sideways pass it. And you put all that together and you said to Callum McGregor, what are you seeing that's making you make these passes? and you had that conversation with him and say, why are you playing passes that would sort of rank in, say, difficulty 3, 4, and 5, when we know you've got the ability to make passes into, like, say, the most difficult options?
There was a couple of 7 and 8. Yeah, there was a couple of times
to talk to him.
The passes were more penetrating in the second half. I mean, if we throw it on to, will it make much difference, Matthew? Like, it's weird to think to go to Rugby Park in a grass pitch. Parfy Ho, who's the only guy that'll be going, you bastard!
I suppose, the issue with Sunday.
Oh, I called him Ho there, man. He's been Ho the whole broadcast and then I've changed his name to Ho. It's Ho, I saw him saying it, my name's Ho. Sorry, so Ho.
It depends what movement there is between now and Sunday. I mean, like, what we will do on Sunday. In theory, I'm not saying we will, but, you know, there is still, we could bring in somebody ahead of, we could bring in more than one player. For all we know, Michael Nicholson is about to cement his positive reputation by, you know, tomorrow morning unveiling 4 £10 million players and, you know, that everyone will be delighted again, maybe. No, I mean, I think Ross used the phrase earlier that on paper last night was a good team, probably our strongest team in terms of the sort of the starting 11. And I think that is the case. Will he do something different on Sunday? I've no way to know that short of, you know, seeing the team line up. I suspect he might. I would like to think that he'd looked and think, right, just playing Duran outright isn't really the right thing. Does he try two up front? Does he try something different? Will he, you know, does he give the likes of Forrest a start? I'm not advocating for Forrest to start, you know, given his age. Forrest should rightly be a backup. But I think that there is this question of, logically, if you were to put money on it, I would expect, unless there's transfer movement, both in or out, I would think that last night's starting 11 will be the starting 11 on Sunday. I'd be very, very surprised if it's not. As I say, I think if it's not, the most likely reason would be that
Johnson's Everton, so, Ingles is at West Ham.
I do suspect that if they're available, I think you would do that. Would you maybe start? I mean, I think the issue with Tonetke, he didn't do a huge amount when he came on last night, but I do prefer him coming on as a substitute. I think the games where he's had the biggest impact, I think the games where you've most felt he had a good game, is not the games where he starts. I think that, you know, the games where he comes on, whether it's because he can often play against tired teams. I think the other question for Sunday is, it's what Kilmarnock are going to do. I mean, last night, I thought Dundee were very good in the sense that Dundee clearly knew roughly what we would do, which is another reason it's not, you know, it's okay to be predictable if you're so good that you can't be stopped. You know, that it doesn't matter if they know what you're going to do. But if you are middling ability, which, you know, for a lot of last season, especially we were in Scotland, and on top of that, teams know what you're going to do, then they can do it. Dundee's strategy was very simple last night. You know, basically man the park. You know, there was very few times it felt, although the goal was one of them, you could see the outrage from the Dundee defence at whoever was supposed to have been marking Negrin. But by and large, they were almost man-marking across the entire park. Then they had the number 27, I'm not sure his name, but number 27 up front, who was very, very fast.
Bevan.
The strategy clearly was just frustrate Celtic. Celtic are not a quick attacking team. So as long as we sort of match them, as long as we do, you know, as long as we can go one-to-one with them, then when we get a chance of a break, which they did a couple of times, you know, Trusty obviously did very well to, you know, speed-wise to keep up. So I think it depends if Kilmarnock do the same, and unless there's a subsequent change on Sunday, I would expect Sunday to go much the same as last night, unless Neil McCann feels very bold and decides to have a go at it. But I think we know
he might do that. He might do. I mean,
McCann is going to look at what Dundee did and say, try and match Celtic, don't press them too much. You've always got the chance of a set piece or anything like that. And I would expect Sunday's game to go pretty much as last night. And I say that not entirely negative. Last night, as we've spoke about a little bit before, it was 1-0. You know, maybe at the end, you know, Dundee could have scored at the end. But if you'd had a scoreline last night that reflected the entirety of the game, 3-0 would flat out Celtic. You know, dominated possession, dominated attacking going forward. had a good few chances that on another day you might score. You know, if we'd got an early goal last night, equally if we get an early goal on Sunday, yeah, it could easily be 3 or 4.
Yeah.
However, they know that if it can frustrate us, that it becomes harder.
Does he change it at all, Stephen, with an eye on Wednesday, next Wednesday, because of the last home game? No, the last home game.
He kind of, you know, that's got to be, I think first, you know, last night, maybe we need to give Presley some credit. You know, you look at the games we Dundee last year, 2 we won with late winners and 1 we got beat 2-0. Last night was actually more comfortable than all the games last year. You know, and you know, Sini Salo made a good save when he had to do, which I think, you know, was, you know, but they're not an easy team to play. Kilmarnock away, setting up to play in a European game, yeah, that's a different one. You know, in a way, I'm still going to come and try and defend and snatch something on next week. You know, they'll be looking to get it back to the home game, won't they? So they should be a similar, you know, they're not going to come out and go all out attack. I don't know their style of play, but I'm guessing that that's how they're going to play. Kilmarnock, McCann was actually aggressive against us last year, wasn't he?
Was.
It wasn't the one game where they were 2-0 up.
Yep.
And Arahu went into the crowd when we got the winner, and he he might fancy himself. He might fancy. There are weaknesses in Celtic. I think defensively we look better last night with Carter Vickers playing.
Yeah, yeah.
I was much more confident with him because he kind of sweeps up. He made Trusty look better.
He did. He did. The guy behind me was saying that.
Trusty had a couple where you relied on Trusty's pace to clear up. You know, Carter Vickers' presence. So actually, that was okay. You know, Scales is still suspended, so that will be the team on Sunday. So then, should that be the team on the Wednesday? As long as we keep all those players for the first game, which I hope we do, then maybe Sunday is... You won't quite have an eye on the Wednesday. You can't disregard... He's not going to change it on Sunday. He's not going to rest players. I don't see O'Neill doing that. He never did it before. He never rested players. Once the league was won, then he brought in the youngsters. So when you were 4-0 up, you know, I thought last night when Forrest was coming on, I love James Forrest, but like, you know, one of the academy players should have been on the bench.
Yeah,
but then you can't bring him on at 1-0 because the game's not won. And that's the danger. But maybe you have one of them on the bench. You know, we'd a lot on the bench last night. Hatate was never going to get on unless somebody got shot.
Yeah.
We had Hatate, McGowan, and Oxlade Chamberlain. Those three were never coming on. So why not have one of the youngsters? Anyway, but that's, I digress. Will he have an eye on Wednesday? I think, yeah. Which game's the most important? For me, it's Wednesday.
That's Wednesday, yeah. Last word to you, Ross.
Well, I was just going to interrupt for a second and say, hold on, this is on. It's not LASK after Kilmarnock, Dundee United.
Oh, shite, aye, I was...
Oh, yes, sorry.
Sorry.
Oh, well, they might have ripped that bit out.
Why was I thinking that?
The point she's making valid, I would probably just move them forward to go, more, how is he going to approach the Dundee United game, which is a League Cup game?
I'm losing a week of my life there.
Yeah.
Okay.
to be fair... You know, as I say, we're in that period of the season where we are going to face a lot of games quite quickly. Obviously, they've cancelled the game between the
home and the second leg, yeah.
Yeah, between the legs. So there's Dundee United in the cup, and then you've obviously got the LASK game. LASK are a team who look to dominate the ball and transition quickly. They play a very similar style to what most teams in Europe are playing now, with the three at the back and then either a 1-4-2 or a 4-1-2, depending on how they're manoeuvring players. They're quite a flexible team. They've got some good players, they've got some good speed in their team. In regards to Kilmarnock, which is obviously more important because it's the next game, Kilmarnock, I think John Jules gave us a rough time last season. In fact, I actually genuinely felt sorry for him because he was having such a good season.
Yeah.
And he got injured against us.
That
was the season. Yeah. To be fair, I credit Kilmarnock for the fact that his deal was up at the end of the season, and even though he was injured, they then extended, so he's got a deal for this season. I kind of caught bits of Kelly against St Johnston. It seemed a bit manic, but John Jules went off injured, which is actually a positive for us because he's big, he's physical, he's quick. He gave them a real rough time.
Yeah, he was Trusty, yeah.
And then they've got Joe Hugel, who's another big sort of big boy up front, as one of my mates likes to call me. They've got a big meaty man up front, as how he would put it. So they are a team that clearly are going to be a team that you would look at going to play quite direct. They might do something similar to Dundee, where they will leave the two up and kind of try and play direct, but then, you know, back off a bit when we've got the ball, which I think is what we have to expect when we come up against these teams, whether home or away, which is why speed of play is so important, having sort of different ideas. There was one thing Duran done last night that I thought was really good on the right wing. I don't know why it impresses me. He's one-on-one with the defender, and it's really starting to get clogged up, and he tried the wee scoop pass over to Johnston. I love that. Yeah. I like seeing players try, especially Celtic players, try something different. So that
there was a few moments like that. There was a few moments of players attempting to express themselves.
Yeah.
Do you see, we Jamesy's flick near the end that he set up Tenecki for that chant. That was beautiful.
Tenecki found the top of the stand. But the Kilmarnock game, I agree with Matthew, it'll be probably not dissimilar to last night, in the sense that I think it goes back to what Matthew said at the very start about the fact that we've never really changed. So we are very predictable, and we have showed the similarities last season where we're not going to get away with going through games and playing well for 20, 25 minutes. That was what happened last season, and we came unstuck, and, you know, in the end we dug it out, or made a dugout in the end.
Yeah.
But
And they rode their luck. I mean, you're not going to do that again.
They rode the first week of the season has been brilliant for us. Let's put it that way. That's the major positive. We had 3 points, clean sheet. Rangers drew, Hearts got beat. The main concern over this weekend, if you were watching them all, was Motherwell. Motherwell were excellent against Hibs for the most part of the game. But yeah, you go into the Kilmarnock game and you go, I think the team will be exactly the same, to be honest. I just want to see us start a game with a bit more aggression. There's been far, far too long over the last 18 months, probably even longer, where we start games and it's like, okay, let's you know, wait for however long it takes them to kick
in. Trying to edge your way into the games. I know. Let's see an old barnstormer. Unless it used to be an old trait, but on that barnstorming note, let's say good night and thanks to everybody. Thanks very much, Matthew.
Thank you very much.
Before we go, I need to know, what's on Matthew's t-shirt tonight? It's been a while since I've seen you, Matthew.
Is that
what we're looking at?
It's Eric Cantona in a Celtic top. And there's a funny story about it. This t-shirt is like, this is more than 30 years old. Wow. And I remember it vividly because, so it was 95, and I think it was 95. And it was Mark Hughes' testimonial. I think it was actually 94.
94. Because I interviewed really Mark Hughes on the pitch that night.
Yeah, I really, really wanted to go to it. However, it was also the night before my standard grade maths exam. And my dad was up for me going, and mum wasn't. And I ran a sort of protest campaign for a few weeks before it, from when it had been announced, you know, just basically, let me go to Manchester. And eventually, sure, it did. It's worth, as an aside, I got a 1 from a standard grade maths, which was like an A, for those of you that might not know the old standard grade system. So, but anyway, but obviously, famously, at the end, Cantona swapped jerseys and ended up with Celtic top. And my dad later got me this t-shirt made. And I know nowadays, you take it for granted nowadays that obviously you can easily get t-shirts made and, you know, like all the rest of it. But it was really unusual. And it was funny because I remember as a wee boy, what I was at 15 or whatever I was, everywhere we went, people would try and buy it from me. I remember going on holiday and people would come, because you would see people double taking going, Is that Eric Cantona? And then they would say, how did you do that? Like, how did you make that? And you're like, well, it's real. You know, it's actually, this is Cantona.
Right, because this is the pre-Photoshop days.
But yeah, so that was my choice of, repertoire. Or
before the eye.
Sartorial decisions for tonight, Ross.
Well done. 30-year-old t-shirt there. Like, almost as old as you, Ross. There you go. Like,
to be fair, I'd have probably been, what year did you say it was?
94. What age were you?
I touch younger than Matthew, but not by much. I vaguely remember something to do with that game, although I can't
Simon Donnelly scored twice. Chick Charnley played for Celtic, and then he wouldn't go on a tour with them because he booked a lad's holiday. There, that's professionalism to the end, eh? Well thanks listen, very I'm much, guys.
I'm just glad you hadn't covered this story before I joined in late, and my apologies for that, because I'm going, actually, as I asked Matthew, I thought, if he's spoken about it at the start, I'm going to send word at the end. So, yeah.
A perfect end. Perfect. Thanks very much, guys, and have a great night, and thanks for joining us, Ross. Thanks for joining us, Matthew. Thanks for joining us, Stephen. God bless you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision. And also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.